put competing stakeholders in a room with strategic oil reserves, and you'll probably end up with a resource conflict in the Middle East. You might also end up with a lot of media spin. This is the story of the Gulf War from 1990 to February 1991. It was the first 24-hour news conflict. This week, it's the 25th anniversary of its military operation, Operation Desert Storm. Associate Professor Goldsmith from the University of Sydney's Department of Government and International Relations has conducted extensive research on public opinion towards conflicts in Iraq, including its influence on foreign policy.
Kuwait was invaded by Iraq in August of 1990. And then there was a series of UN resolutions and diplomatic activity that led up to the invasion, military action by the U.S. and many allies, dozens of allies, to force Iraq to remove its military forces from Kuwait.
Yes, certainly. And as I understand, I mean, there was a lot of fear about what could happen if Iraqi forces did take hold of that region, because if they did, as I understand it, then they would actually be in control of one-fifth of the world's oil supply. So, I mean, similar to what had happened in the Cold War, there was this real atmosphere of fear about who would hold the most power in the world. And I guess that is what you're saying, is that that fueled a lot of the coalition forces to join together, because, I mean, the military alliance formed by coalition forces was the largest since World War II.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting in these cases, because there are the strategic objectives and the great power concerns about balance of power in an important region, alliances and all of that. But it's difficult to say whether those dangers are always associated with public support for conflict. So certainly Kuwait has large oil reserves, and combining Iraqi and Kuwaiti oil reserves would have made Iraq a much more important player in world energy markets. But then the threat to Saudi Arabia was not insignificant as well. And so the concern over Iraq trying to expand further, or at least being able to apply greater pressure and cause more disruption in world energy markets, was really important. And this is, although it's often said sort of cynically that there's a war for oil when you get these contests in the Middle East, especially, the as you say, the amount of power and influence that can come from actually controlling the tap and being able to turn off the supply of oil to other countries whose economies run on energy from oil and some other sources is extremely important and something that causes great concern.
Yes,
but that often doesn't translate. I mean, the message in the U.S. When George H.W. Bush was trying to rally support before the invasion, rally support in the U.S. for whatever he was going to do, he tried several different messages, but the messages that worked weren't necessarily the cold, calculating power strategy messages. The messages about jobs seemed to work a bit better, and comparing Saddam Hussein to Hitler seemed to work a bit better, but also having UN approval really helped.
Right, and when you say the message about jobs, could you elaborate on that for a little bit for me, please?
Well, sure. I mean, the message that both George H.W. Bush and his Secretary of State, James Baker, eventually came to deliver to the U.S. public was one of, a real threat to the U.S. economy, which would mean the loss of jobs. And that's something that, can be understood in a more immediate way by regular citizens than you know, the geostrategic positioning and competition over energy supplies, and how, you know, Saddam Hussein's influence in the region would be greatly enhanced, and his leverage over Europe and U.S. would be enhanced. But, you know, going into these long strategic explanations might make sense to people like me who study international politics, but to the regular person who has, you know, leads a normal life, it's the communicating the threat is not always so easy.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly would make it a lot easier for the layperson to understand what the real threat is. And how did the live broadcasting of this conflict by CNN help with the dissemination of that concern for Bush's government?
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, the broadcast by CNN and especially the way that it was managed by the U.S. military is really taken as a you know, a textbook example of how to spin a war. you know, and I was, you know, I was a university student at the time, and I remember it very well. And it, you know, it really was in the U.S. Everyone would go home to watch the war on TV in the evening, and the general in charge of the operation, Norman Schwarzkopf, was very good on TV and very good at explaining what was going on. And the controls on the U.S. news media and other news media covering it were pretty severe. And the U.S. military really managed, and this is really a well-known and sort of influential story on all sides, that the way the U.S. managed the media coverage of the war, only allowing journalists into some parts at some times of the battlefield, you know, often for legitimate reasons, but also often for reasons of spin, and only showing videos that seem to show very precise and successful airstrikes. Those sorts of things really did create an impression in people's minds that the war was a success and that the costs were low. That, you know, that the cause was just as well. There was definitely this undercurrent in the coverage that came through, and I think that influenced how it was perceived abroad as well, because the coverage was really managed. Even if it wasn't on CNN, it was managed so that the other, you know, networks or TV outlets around the world got that same message and that same footage.
That was Associate Professor Goldsmith. My name is Georgia Clark, reporting for 2SER.